Call the meeting to order. The clerk will take the roll, and Representative Myra, would you move the minutes, please?
Yes. I have reviewed the minutes, and I move the minutes.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Takes care of that. Welcome. Big list. Okay, the chair will move House File 1104 to pass with recommendation to Ways and Means. And I have a delete all amendment. It should be in your folder. And I will explain the amendment the best I can, and then we can start discussing that. And we have quite a few witnesses today that will tell us why they shouldn't be canceled or why they should, or they'll give us a lot of information. So I'm going to move the DE1 amendment. And starting on page 1, you'll see a lot of new items on there. These we got either from MMB or the agency saying this is leftover money, things that are going to cancel June 30th anyway, so we thought we would just simply add them to the bill and be done with it. And then with regard to the other things, we have the Minnesota Planetarium at $22 million, the Mesabi Trail Connection at $950,000, the Minnesota State Academy's Mott Hall at $100,000, Greenleaf State Recreation Area at $1.3 million, the Heartland Trail at $1.5 million, the Umpstead County Regional Public Safety Training Center at $3,655,000. We took out the Minnehaha Park Glen area stabilization because we were told that it is well under construction and the invoices are being prepared, so we took that out. Then the National Solar Rating Certification Lab, the Intercity Passenger Rail at $26 million, and then I think I'm going to let Deb Dyson explain on page 2, line 26, the authorizations reduced and explain why it says $355 million.
Mr. Chair and members, if you're referring to the 2010 authorizations that are reduced,
yeah.
In the 2010 Capital Investment Act, a number of items were vetoed, and this reduces the bond sale authorization to correspond with the vetoed items. And
Okay, what would be the preference of the committee? Would you like to take testimony first, or do you want to ask some Representative Houseman?
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to, if you just want to vote first on the amendment, because it's the author's amendment, to get it before us. I did have a couple of questions about the amendment. So when,
okay, then,
you want
all right,
to
ask the
first.
Questions on the amendment, and then we'll adopt the amendment, and
okay.
Then we'll go.
And this one is just confusion. I didn't understand why, and this is maybe more for staff, because my understanding is everything from 2006 back should automatically have been canceled. So how is it that we still have 1994, 2001, 2002? Why they wouldn't have automatically canceled in previous years? Because this is the year, I think, that up to 2006 would automatically cancel. And does anyone know why they wouldn't have canceled?
Ms. Sewers knows.
Mr. Chair and Representative Houseman, the cancellation report is based on a point-in-time picture of unencumbered and uncommitted funds in the budget system at on December 31st of 2010. And so with the 1994 and the 2001 appropriations that are included in the amendment, those projects did not have funds that were uncommitted at that point in time. So as an example, with the 1994 Board of Water and Soil Resources appropriation, those funds were encumbered in the system. They are, or likely were, flagged for easements and are under contract. It's just that the department hasn't spent them at this point.
And, Mr. Chair, so, for example, the Capitol Complex electrical infrastructure, where I know they have been begging for money, it's hard to imagine why almost $3 million wouldn't have been spent since 2001. So you're saying there was...
Representative Hausman, I think that's $2,000.
I'm sorry?
I think that's $2,000, not $2,000. It's $2,776.
Oh, you see, I'm always accustomed to three extra zeros that
well, Representative Hausman,
that we don't put.
When I looked at some of these numbers, I thought, boy, this is going to be a lot larger bill than I thought, but
yes.
No.
Okay, so these then are probably balances, Mr. Chair.
You're correct.
Okay. And then on, Mr. Chair, one more on some of the 2005 and 2006. They are different amounts than on the cancellation sheet. Do we have an understanding of why?
We do, Ms. Zeros. Explain, sorry, for butchering your name.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, like I said, the cancellation report is a point-in-time report. And so if there was action on, if the agencies have taken action since the printing of that report, if the project was, say, became under contract during that time or moved forward, then the project may have a better understanding in terms of how much money is actually needed. So a lot of times what you'll see is actually from the cancellation report and at a later date an increase in the amount of money that is uncommitted.
And then, Mr. Chair, just one more, if I could, and that's the Mott Hall one. And it almost looked as though what was in the DE1, unless that was changed, we, in 2000, I think this is 10, we changed the language. So it didn't say Mott Memorial Hall. It said Technology Center. So we're canceling something, but it's different language than we would have changed it to in 2010.
It's my understanding that this is, they haven't done anything with this money, and they're not probably in the near future going to do anything with the money. And maybe they will be here today to tell us that they will, but they haven't yet.
Except, Mr. Chair, what is still in the DE1 says Mott Hall, and I thought we deleted that language and added Technology Center. Or maybe Ms. Dyson has a...
Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, you're correct that in 2010 that was amended. In drafting this, I used the original title of it, but you'll see that it also refers to the 2008 law as amended by 2010 Chapter 189, Section 54. So it does refer to the right provision, but okay. It could be entitled the Technology Hall. But okay. In drafting, I used the original building name. Thank you.
Okay, then I'll renew my motion to adopt this amendment. Any more discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Now, would you like to discuss the bill as amended, or should we get to the testimony?
Mr. Chair, my only other question was about the Southeast Minnesota Public Training Center, but I believe we're having testimony on that, so I could just wait.
Okay. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I was looking in the audience to see if the Board of Water and Soil Resources was here, and I don't know if they are, and maybe that's something they could testify. I'm looking at Subdivision 2 and Subdivision 5, those two, working off the DE, when you add those together, you're dealing with hundreds of thousands of dollars and just wanting to get a little bit of, they're a little different than a $2,000 or a $3,000 one, so if we could get some testimony on that. And also on Subdivision 8, the capital restoration is about $200,000. And I don't know if Department of Administration is here, so just kind of queuing up if there's folks in the audience.
Well, Representative Hanson, they're leftover balances. They're complete. This is leftover money.
Mr. Chair, for both of those, if I can go to the Board of Water and Soil Resources, the Board of Water and Soil Resources, with Subdivision 2 and Subdivision 5, still have programs that we are funding for easements that are not conservation reserve enhancement easements, but are very similar easements. And so I'd like to get some context of, we're appropriating additional dollars for conservation easements, and here we're canceling dollars. If they'd had any ability to use these dollars in the appropriation for those, I know they have demand for conservation. That's my question, if that authority was there.
Representative Hanson, we notified everyone and told them exactly what we were doing and wanted comments, be it positive or negative, instructions. And most everyone called us or notified us by letter or email. And those that didn't, we're assuming that they're okay with the cancellations. And I will backtrack and make sure that they, what they did, if they notified us or not. And if they didn't and we pass this bill to Ways and Means, we'll make sure that they know that and they'll come there and verify if they're not here today. Okay. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, maybe this will come up in testimony, but I was involved with the funding for the planetarium, and I also carried the library merger bill, and we extended that to 2012. Now, I do know that the location is up in the air. Because they'll no longer be part of the Minneapolis or the now Minneapolis / Hennepin County library system. But will we be hearing from them? There would obviously have to be an amendment if we didn't cancel it because of a change in location and whatever other changes might be taking place. But I'm a little concerned about a flat out repeal of the project at this point. Because it's my understanding they would still like to proceed. It's just that they need a different or a new partner and a new location. And the law currently says they have until 2012.
Well, Representative Carlson, I understand that, and some of these decisions that were made were difficult. And at this point in time, I don't feel that they're going to be ready for quite a while. But if they are able to get everything together and come back next year, I don't see a problem. But for right now, they're simply not ready, and it doesn't appear that they're going to move forward.
Well, perhaps, are they going to testify?
Yes, they are.
Okay, perhaps they can expand upon the letter that's here then as to where they stand in terms of a location and a partner.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to piggyback off of Representative Hanson's question, you know, I get from my soil and water conservation district folks, you know, that are continually looking to do the good things that they do to receive funding for that, and I know that their funding comes from Bowser as well. So, you know, I'm interested in that whole conversation. But my question really is, do we know how many, you know, the cancellation projects? Is there any impact on federal dollars here that may happen because I think these most of these cancel out in July, I think, or something on that nature, some of these. And so are there any federal dollars that may be lost to any of these cancellations due to the cancellation?
Well, Representative Ward, the ones that will cancel June 30th, obviously they're going to cancel whether there is federal dollars or not, because they're done, it's over, they've completed. To honestly answer that question specifically, I can't, but no one has brought that forward and said that there are missing dollars. Representative Hausman, do you know something that...
To that, it would be the $26 million or the 25-point-something million for high-speed rail that would have been for the purpose of matching federal dollars.
Okay. Agnes Vaughn, Minnesota Planetarium President. would you identify yourself for the committee and proceed? And we're going to try to give everybody 5 minutes. We're going to try real hard to hold the line so we will actually, everyone will get a chance to testify.
Okay. My name is Angus Vaughn, president of the Minnesota Planetarium Society. Chairman Howes and committee members, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify before you today representing the Minnesota Planetarium Society staff, board, and on behalf of all the Minnesota school children. We are here to oppose any proposed cancellation of the $22 million in bonding authority for the state-level planetarium facility and ask that you leave the authority in place through 2012 as currently written. Canceling this project will eliminate the best answer we have to the diminishing student interest in achievement in STEM education, STEM subjects, and erodes the progress we have made so far in the past 5 years promoting STEM education in the state of Minnesota. Someone once said the two most important things in life are children and a great idea. Since 2006, the Society has taken a great idea and served 100,000 school children through our popular Explorodome traveling outreach program. In doing so, we have changed the nature of STEM education in Minnesota and created a model that is being replicated around the world. We use a minds-on interactive technology method of teaching and learning in an immersive digital dome theater. The Society has helped expand the methodology and technology for doing so to most of the 9 state regional planetariums across the state. These sites now form the base of the first interconnected domed learning network in the world. With interactive dome broadcasting, this revitalized network teaching planetariums around the state are now a highly valued STEM center for excellence. In 2009, 3 small grade school-based planetariums in St. Paul, Rochester, and Mankato participated in a first-ever White House Star Party. A temporary NASA dome was on the White House lawn, and a guest presenter from the Hayden Planetarium in New York jointly took the group of middle schoolers from Washington, D.C. and Minnesota on a virtual tour of the universe through NASA data. The results were all made possible by the Society's work to build, demonstrate, and refine the programmatic focus for our new planetarium. We appreciate the opportunity to share the outcomes we have produced and to ask ourselves, how do we do this and sustain this over the time to best serve the citizens of the state? We are grateful for this committee to taking seriously the stewardship of taxpayers' money. We also know we have a great idea with a challenging problem. The planetarium is prescribed for the rooftop of the Minneapolis, now Hennepin County Central Library, is a highly valuable project, but is beset by challenges that have caused us to reimagine the project. While the plan has merit, as first proposed in 2002 as part of the library construction, it does not today. For the better part of a year, we have been responsive to the new normal landscape for educational nonprofits today and are pursuing a very promising collaboration strategy. The strength of the collaboration is expected to make this project a reality. We envision a partnership with Minnesota's flagship university and its Museum of Natural History. The Society entered into discussions with the Bell Museum of Natural History in August 2010 to determine if a programmatic partnership was feasible. We are also holding ongoing discussions with university officials about the possibility of merging the two bonding projects, the other being the Bell Museum of Natural History. While we have not concluded the process of formalizing this partnership, I believe it critical information to be shared with this committee before you make your decisions. Philanthropists and foundations have urged us to look at collaborations in order to get a bigger bang for their investment. If this partnership or even merger were to occur, a combined facility of a state-of-the-art digital immersion visualization theater and the state's Natural History Museum would be a STEM education jewel for this state and for everybody in the state and the envy of other states. I'd like to suggest that this is a win-win-win for Minnesota. Both projects get done, it saves taxpayer money, and philanthropists realize the investment return. If we lose this opportunity, we'll be doing the children of this state a grave disservice. Retaining the bonding is critical to moving ahead with this partnership. The case for this facility remains the same as it was approved by the legislature and the governor originally. Construction capacity is idled and interest rates are very advantageous. As the economy continues to recover and improve, donors are more likely to make commitments now rather than in 2 years' time. Now is the time for investing in Minnesota's educational prosperity. Minnesota native Pinky Nelson stated his desire to become an astronaut was a direct result of his visit to the Minneapolis Planetarium as a young child. I have included in your packet of information some quotes from some of the children who have experienced this as well. The state's technology industry leaders are enthusiastic supporters, and last November, they bestowed upon us the Techni Award from the Minnesota High Tech Association for best use of technology by a nonprofit in education. The old Minneapolis Planetarium was in service for 50 years and received about 4 million visitors through its life. In the last year of its operation with outdated technology, it saw 75,000 students before its doors were shut in 2002. Which of the myriad of children in this state will be the next founder of 21st century technology, the next Pinky Nelson, or even Carl Sagan? In closing, our programming plants the seeds of imagination for the next generation of scientific entrepreneurs. This project is for our children, their children, and the long-term economic benefit of the state of Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Label, did you want to say something? We did go a little over, but I'll give you a little bit of time.
My colleague, Mr. Vaughn, covered it all. I would just add that the state has identified that science, technology, engineering, and math is a crucial, vital goal for the state's educational programs and crucial for our economic security. And in our opinion, this is the best thing going. We've got to light that fire among students and build achievement and interest and inspiration in those children. Thank you for your time today.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, as I mentioned earlier, I was involved in the merger legislation and also carried the legislation for the extension to 2012. I think this one falls in a little different category because it does have a timeline until 2012, although we know that the situation has changed in terms of location. So if we were able to retain the 2012 deadline with the partnership you're trying to develop with the Bell Museum and so on, would that timeline still work if things fell into place?
Mr. Vaughn.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Carlson, or Representative Carlson, we would like to think it would. We have been working hard, granted that the university has new leadership coming in July of 2011 and administration, but we've been working with them. The university has a number of proposals on plan, but if we were able to retain the bonding through the end of 2012 and were able to, hypothetically, were able to merge these organizations, I do believe that with the help of the university's foundation, we would be able to fast track this process and probably get majority of this underway.
Mr. Chairman, just a quick question of yourself or staff. Is this the only project that has a date on into the future, in this case 2012, that would be canceled? Are all the rest of them projects that time has already expired?
We're looking.
We can go back to that, Mr. Chairman, if you want to move ahead.
Okay,
I know you have a lot
we'll
of people.
Do that. We'll be checking
if
on
it's
that.
Sometime during the meeting, I would be interested in knowing that because I think that does put it in a little different category from what I understand the rest of them are, but we'll wait for staff to get back to us.
Ms. Dyson, I believe, has that answer.
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, excuse me. I have a partial answer without checking to see. Some of these, there are a number of appropriations from 2008 listed in here, and one from 2009, or two from 2009 that are not completed. The question is, would they go forward? And or the ones that are listed, are they completed and this is the amount remaining? But there are ones where the timeline for implementing the projects has not expired.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Olmsted County? Please identify yourself for the tape and then go ahead.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Steve Borkhart. I'm the retired sheriff from Olmsted County and one of the individuals that worked on this project over the course of 10 years. And I'm here to ask your consideration of eliminating this project from your bill because it has very strong support throughout the public safety community in southeast Minnesota. It is absolutely essential to the training of public safety personnel in southeast Minnesota. Considerable local funds have been spent on developing the project to date, and the Olmsted County Board is committed to seeing this project through. So I'm asking that you eliminate it from the bill. This all began back in 1998 when a group of firefighters came to me, the Olmsted County Sheriff, and asked if I would help them try to get a public safety facility funded for southeast Minnesota because they didn't have any farms to burn down anymore. And when a farm became available, they had problems with OSHA regulations or asbestos abatement or insurance concerns, or it just didn't become available when it was necessary. Some of these departments are replacing 3 and 4 people a year. They needed to be able to get them inside a fire wearing the breathing apparatus on a timely basis, not 2 years hence when a farm might become available. Shortly before we were successfully funded in 2008, we had a newspaper photo in Olmsted County in Rochester of the Rochester Fire Department. Now, that's the fire department of the third largest municipality in the state of Minnesota, burning down some old motel cabins in order to get some training actually operating in a fire. These buildings were smaller than a single car garage, and that's all they could find to burn down because they didn't have any kind of burn facility that was in reasonable proximity to drive to in one day, conduct a day's worth of training, and be able to drive home. So the need is absolutely essential. We put our plan together. We brought it to the bonding committees each year, 2000, 2002, 2004, 2006. I'm sure some of you that were on the committee remember the many trips to Rochester to sit and listen to us talk about it at the Armory and at the Civic Center. Finally, in 2008, we were successful in obtaining the bonding. It was a much scaled-down version, and it was largely because there were a group of public safety training facilities, a regional concept that came through that year, and there was funding for a project in Marshall and in Scott County, and I believe one county up north, though it escapes me exactly which one. And part of that concept was then a more advanced facility and project at Camp Ripley. So as a part of that regional plan on a statewide basis, it was granted. It would have moved forward that year. We had but to complete some design work for the specifications on bid documents, and then what happened in September of 2008? The bottom fell out of the economy, and the Olmsted County Commissioners decided they just needed to put it on the back burner, get into 2009, see what it looked like. We know what it looked like in 2009, the early part of 2009. They said we need to put this off until 2010. Until 2010, they resumed work on it. And through this last autumn, they were resuming design work to prepare for bid documents. They want to make some changes to the original bill to accommodate some changes they'd like to make to the project, namely shrink it. But the commitment is there to build it. And but for the recession of 2008, this thing would be in the ground, the money would be spent, and we wouldn't even be sitting here. There's an absolute need for it. I ask you to eliminate it from your bill. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Yes, Mr. Chairman, good afternoon and members of the committee. A little realignment of our speaking order. My name is Paul Wilson. I am an Olmsted County Commissioner and Chair of the County Board this year. As Sheriff Borkhart has already attributed to, there is an effort, if you will, House File 265, that essentially would amend and downsize the original request from 2008. And this certainly, I would say, is done, if you look at it in the broader perspective of the concept of redesign, which many of you may have heard about, that counties and local governments have talked about. This certainly is in that spirit. As we look at how we have designed this, how we have put this together, looking at doing a shared receptionist and scheduler with our Public Works Department, looking at various options and opportunities as this has moved forward. Bottom line is, our commitment is certainly still there. It will lower the cost for the state of Minnesota for approximately $700,000. And we would like to request, certainly as you look forward and move forward with your process, that you look at this and move forward.
Did the sheriff or sheriff's deputies want to say a few things? Looked like you guys were at attention. I wasn't sure.
There you go.
Representative Swinson, you.
Mr. Chair, are these the same testifiers for the same? Okay.
Yes.
So currently, Mr. Chair, where do you guys travel then? I'm assuming you do travel someplace to do training. You don't just wait for a farm to burn down. Where do you currently travel, and what are the current costs to that yearly expenditure?
If only you want to answer that, identify yourself for the tape first. And then.
I'm Mark Darnell. I'm Chief Deputy with Olmsted County Sheriff's Office in Rochester. Currently, we would have to, any of the firefighters would have to train as far away as Scott County on that. I can't give you the costs off the top of my head, but obviously that's about a two-hour drive trying to get a fire truck up that way or anything, even in law enforcement-wise, to go up to use that type of a facility. Would be extremely expensive.
That's all, I guess.
Okay, then you go ahead and identify yourself with the tape, and you've got a couple minutes left.
Mr. Chair, I'm Dave Mueller. I'm the Olmsted County Sheriff, and I just am also here just to speak in terms of we do want to remove this from the bill. And we do have a companion bill, Bill 265, in which we are asking for a reduction, as already was spoken of. This is a regional safety training center. So this is not just for Olmsted County and the city of Rochester, although certainly we're a large population center and would gain significantly from it. But the six district sheriffs, the southeast sheriffs, the chiefs, the fire departments from those locations all will be recipients of this training center and will be benefactors of it. We are very committed to make sure that this is a regional training center. So we expect that there will be a significant win and within close proximity to the departments within the southeast area we'll be able to provide services there, and they'll be able to do joint training with our larger organizations as well as for each of the volunteer fire departments within our area. And I don't know that there's a lot more that I need to share other than our educational institutions also are very interested in working together with us. So the universities, both the Rochester Community College, Riverland Technical College provides law enforcement and fire training there, and those institutions also are partners with us in this training center and want to participate. So I just wanted to share that with you and ask for your assistance in having this removed from the bill. And then
Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, I don't know which of the four might be able to answer this, but as I recall, there was a time when our state was afraid of proliferation of training centers all over the state, and so we did a statewide study to determine which we should build, and this was one of the centers that we identified in that state report that was an appropriate regional facility to build. I see nodding heads saying yes, so my memory must be accurate.
Yes, I can't tell you precisely what years, but there was a commission impaneled, and I believe Charlie Weaver was with Commissioner of Public Safety at that point in time. One year they studied the wisdom of having regional centers as a strategy. They came back to the legislature. They said, we accept this. It looks like it's a good idea. Now go forward and tell us where we ought to put them. The next year they came back with an amended report that recommended Rochester as one of the sites. Yes.
I'll give you a couple minutes if you could really make it fast.
Okay, I certainly will. Thank you. Again, Mark Darnell, Chief Deputy with Olmsted County Sheriff's Office. I guess I would, Mr. Chairman, or representatives, a day without learning is a wasted day. And in law enforcement and in public safety in general, every day is a training day. We have been working, I was assigned to this project about 18 months ago. And as you had heard previously, there was just a little bit of a hiatus while we looked at the economy and our budget. And as we moved through it, that we now are back on track and doing things moving forward. We've been doing what we can with the land. We took it over in December, and we're waiting for the spring thaw to start moving in so we can start doing some things. We have done some things that we can do, and that is like putting in a water line for the burn tower, things like that have allowed us to move ahead on this project. I guess I just kind of leave it with you with this. We would obviously like this removed from your bill. Right now, it'd be like building half a bridge. We're halfway there. Don't leave us dangling off the edge. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Now we have the intercity passenger rail. Looks like we have about four people. Identify yourself for the tape, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Bernie Arsenault. I'm the Deputy Commissioner and Chief Engineer for the Minnesota DOT. Last year, MnDOT, together with Minnesota Passenger Rail Forum and all of its partners, completed its first ever statewide freight and passenger rail plan. The plan establishes a common vision and an integrated program for both freight and passenger rail improvements that provide increased travel options for Minnesotans, support job creation, and respond to rising energy costs. In short, the rail system is a vital component of Minnesota's multimodal transportation system. The rail plan recommends the development of both intrastate and intercity passenger rail services to better connect communities within Minnesota and to points beyond our borders. In 2009, the Pawlenty administration requested this $26 million program in general obligation bonds to position Minnesota to receive federal funds for passenger rail development in Minnesota. This was prior to the adoption of the state rail plan and before details of the federal rail program had been developed. Now the plan is complete and the program is established, and we are now ready to use the $26 million. MnDOT, together with its partners from around the state, have been using the rail plan and the bond appropriations to actively develop individual passenger rail corridors and projects. And I'll highlight some of those initiatives. For the service between the Duluth and the Twin Cities, the NLX line, we have spent $800,000 to design improvements on part of the rail line and targeted more than $9 million to match federal funds for additional preliminary engineering and design work. For service between the Twin Cities and Chicago, we have targeted $550,000 that match federal funds for continuing environmental and design work. For the St. Paul Union Depot Transportation Center, we have executed an agreement for nearly $10 million that also provides local match for federal funds. For the Minneapolis Transportation Interchange Center, we have targeted $3.7 million to assist with the development of that project. And for the service between Rochester and the Twin Cities, we've targeted $2 million to assist with the development of that project. To summarize, we expect to have one half to three quarters of the $26 million obligated within a few months, and that will create jobs in Minnesota. By continuing the development work that is supported by this bonding appropriation, we maintain our eligibility for future federal funds. The Federal Railroad Administration just yesterday announced a new competitive solicitation for $2.4 billion with proposals due April 4th. This is a good opportunity to bring significant amounts of additional federal funds to Minnesota to address our needs, but we will not be able to compete for federal funds if we cannot offer matching funds and show development progress. In the past, because we were not fully prepared, opportunities were missed. MnDOT and its partners across this state do not want to miss them again. Thank you, and I'd be happy to address any questions you may have.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, you referenced the passenger rail study. Did that show any like job creation numbers, or what was the economic impact of the state investing in passenger rail?
Mr. Chair and Representative, certainly there is a great deal of job creation that would occur with just the work to develop those lines and also to ultimately construct them. In terms of detail for that, we can certainly get it for you, or I could ask one of my colleagues to come to the table.
Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, I just have to talk about Wisconsin a little bit, and if it's okay, I have an article that I'd like to...
Madam Chair, what are you going to talk about Wisconsin? <distribute. laughs> This meeting could end quickly.
As you know, our plans in the upper Midwest were changed somewhat by the election of a governor in Wisconsin who changed the plans in Wisconsin. But even that governor understands the importance of aggressive bonding. And in this morning's paper, if you're good newspaper readers, you might have seen the headline that says, Walker proposes $1.1 billion bonding bill. And he's excited about this because he says we're aggressively using funds to maintain state buildings, plan for growth, and most importantly, create jobs. So this governor of Wisconsin understands the importance of a big bonding bill, and he believes that they can create jobs. And it's not just for roads and bridges, but he proposes to build a new Badger Performance Center and a creation of a museum. So all those arts and cultural organizations this governor of Wisconsin also sees a value in. I thought it was helpful to inform this committee while we have the one project before us that we are still hoping for partnerships with Wisconsin, that the governor of Wisconsin is very aggressively moving on bonding.
Mr. Arsenal, I have to ask this. In the projects you have here in the list of, let's say, importance, let's just say when this, between now and Ways and Means or in Ways and Means, we were to decide to give you a portion of this, could you pick one or two that would rise right to the top?
Mr. Chair and members, I think, you know, all of these are very important, which is, I'm sure, no surprise to you. And I also think that, you know, what makes this even stronger of a program is that we have brought together all of the stakeholders across the state, all the passenger rail lines, the advocates for those lines, the counties, the cities, and they have worked through the passenger rail plan to identify a program that addresses the priorities. Obviously, there are far more needs than there are available funds, and they've worked hard to address these priorities. So I would defer to which would be the most important, but I would argue, I think, at this table that because of the collaborative nature of the development of this program, I would hesitate to set out a priority on those lines.
Representative Hanson.
Mr. Chair, and I think the testifier indicated that there's job creation involved with passenger rail, and I don't know on the procedures if you want to take an amendment now or if you want to wait until testifiers are done.
I think we're going to wait until the testifiers are done.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And Mr. Chair, members, I understand that because of the fact that this was a program developed by a collaborative of all the stakeholders, that the other representatives who are going to speak to this are going to defer, but I would wait to see if any of them feel the need to fill any gaps.
Looks like you did a good job. Okay, the City of Detroit Lakes, the Heartland Trail.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, Representative Scalzi.
Maybe there's somebody in the audience before we get to the next testifier that would be willing to tell us how many federal funds we're talking about with this intercity passenger rail. There must be a total somewhere that somebody knows, maybe in the audience, before we get off that subject.
Is there anyone from MnDOT or anywhere else that could give us an idea of federal funds?
Mr. Chair and members, at this time, there's actually the $2.4 billion that is available from Florida's turning down of that program. So that is the solicitation is open until April 4th, and we are prepared to move on that solicitation.
Representative Scott.
Thank you. I was under the impression that we're going to have more testifiers on that subject, but I just wanted to speak to this Northern Lights issue for a moment because it is close by to my district. These trains are just not delivering as promised, and federal funds are not. It's all my money and your money, and I don't think that we should be these trains seem to be a losing investment at this point. The first estimate on the Northern Lights Express was $300 million. A year later, it was $615 million. Now it's up to nearly $1 billion, and I've talked with some folks at MnDOT. This doesn't seem like a real viable idea, and I believe that the said development that was supposed to go up around these trains is just not happening, and we don't have a good population density up in the Duluth area to constitute investing $1 billion in a project like this. And at that, the estimate was about 3,000 passengers a day, and those cost estimates make it even less efficient. So I would just speak against the furthering of these trains, the intercity transit. Thank you.
Whichever one of you want to go first, identify yourself for the tape, and then go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Brad Green, Director of Public Works for the City of Detroit Lakes, which includes parks and trails. And I'm also representing the Heartland Trail Association that represents 11 cities, three chamber of commerces over three counties, and that includes numerous citizen groups that have participated in the development of the Heartland Trail Extension Master Plan developed by the DNR. I have included a little handout for the committee members to look at, highlighting the economic impact and also the work completed and ongoing by the committee. After fulfilling the requirements of the bonding bill to complete the master plan, we are now set to move ahead in a timely and efficient manner to begin construction of the Heartland Trail extension. With the Heartland Trail master plan completed, the DNR has utilized a state master agreement with MnDOT to contract the design of an underpass on Highway 10 between the cities of Detroit Lakes and Frazee. This is a crucial component of the Heartland Trail development. It will allow immediate use of the trail for snowmobiles, bikes, and pedestrians, providing a safe crossing of the only major four-lane state highway intersecting the Strait Corridor. As part of the Highway 10 reconstruction several years ago, over a half-mile section of the Heartland Trail has been built along Big Detroit's beautiful and historic overlook. The underpass would then connect this portion of the trail immediately. And the time frame is as follows. Design and planning has started December 2010. We're planning to have that completed in the spring of 2011. Construction and design specifications would be completed this summer of 2011. Bid letting is targeted for the fall, give or take the 4 or 6 weeks we need to do it, the fall of 2011. And approval of bids would be by December 2011 so that construction could start in a timely manner in the spring of 2012. If the money was delayed, construction would be pushed back another full year, possibly 2 years or more, depending on availability of future funding. The Heartland Trail Association is a very active group with 25 members attending the February meeting in Holly, over 21 attending the March meeting in Osage, and the next meeting is scheduled for May 13th, as April 1 is canceled due to the pending snow melt, which has us all concerned in our area coming up. The group's assignment is to find the best route for the trails, considering the counties and communities' plan for future growth, economic development, and promoting the health of residents, and also the needs of a variety of motorized and non-motorized users. The City of Detroit Lakes and Frazee have also stepped forward and purchased approximately 7-acre parcel of land on a lake that was the last piece of land needed to complete the right-of-way between the two cities. This will now enable the construction to begin and become the first link of the Heartland Trail extension from Park Rapids to Moorhead. This property is about halfway between the communities and will be turned over to the state of Minnesota. Helping achieve the goal of the DNR's recreational trail program to conserve, protect, and use Minnesota land resources, providing a broad spectrum of opportunities for existing and future generations. The citizens of Detroit Lakes have also approved a 1% sales tax on food and beverages with the help of legislation, with one of the stipulations that money will go to our trail system, which ties into this very nicely as we step forward on that. The city of Detroit Lakes is also working very hard and closely with two private businesses, Sanford Health and Essentia Health, that are doing major facility renovations in Detroit Lakes, and as part of their agreement are also constructing part of the Northland Trail that adjoins their property within the city this summer. We also have negotiated and secured several properties from landowners for the trail along the proposed route within the city also. We want the three county areas to continue to be a destination place for all state residents to enjoy the coniferous and hardwood forests, lakes, and prairies in this unique region of our great state. This funding will help make this possible, connecting this diversity of terrain across our state, making this not only a great place to grow up into, but to also grow old. So all of us on the Heartland Trail Extension Association urge you not to cancel the $1.5 million appropriation so construction can start without delay in the time frame we have set. Thank you.
Did you want to say something, too?
Sure. Yeah. Jonathan Smith, City Administrator in the City of Frazee. Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for having us. As Mr. Green stated, this $1.5 million was in the bonding bill in 2008, was granted. Due to some delays with the master plan for the extension of the Heartland Trail, we weren't able to utilize it as quickly as we had hoped. Now we've completed the master plan, and we're full steam ahead with this project. And as he stated with the timeline, we are set to break ground in early spring of 12. So the importance of the trail, obviously for the city of Detroit Lakes and the city of Frazee, is very great. It's a very large economic impact for the city of Frazee as we have kind of redefined what economic development is for our city. We have given up on attracting the large employers, and we've become more of the natural resource community that we can be. We have a great river that was designated as a state trail canoe and kayak route a few years back. This will also, you know, tie in with that. And then we're also working on the North Country Trail, which is a federal hiking trail, walking trail, that will come through our states and hopefully land in Frazee as well. So the city of Frazee has an opportunity to be a large major trailhead and be the only city in Minnesota to have two state trails and a federal trail joining together. So thank you for your consideration.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So how many miles are we looking at here?
This part of the trail will be about, will be about 10 miles, with the major project being an underpass underneath a four-lane highway. And that also is a big safety concern for everybody. And right now there's been quite a few accidents there with snowmobiles and stuff, so it provides a safe passage for them as well.
Mr. Chair, how old is the project in total?
I believe, Mr. Chair and committee members, it started, the project started in 2005, the concept started, and then I believe the DNR got on board in 2005, 2006 to start developing the master plan as part of the state trail system.
And it, Representative Swazinski.
Mr. Chair, is there, you know, I'm trying to learn a little bit with the trail legacy funds and some of that. Is there any conjoining with that program, or was this prior to that, or what, yeah.
So. Mr. Smith?
Mr. Chair, it started prior to the legacy funds and that. We've definitely looked at that opportunity to help fund this project. But as a state, you know, being an extension of a state trail that was previously funded, I think that's why it started in where it's at and received bonding funds.
We've gone a little bit over, but if you can really keep it short, go ahead, identify yourself for the day.
Okay, Vic Olson, a bicyclist. Over 30 years ago, I'm from Nevis, and for over 30 years ago, the state took the pioneering act and created the Heartland Trail for recreational bike riding from Park Rapids east to Walker, about 28 miles. And that was one of the first bike trails in the state, if not the first. The popularity was immediate, and a groundswell for more trails coming from around the state came up to have to the point where last year Minnesota is considered the best trail state in the country. Biking in Minnesota has become an integral part of the tourism industry up in our area. 20 years ago, boats behind cars were the number one thing. You can make a case now the bike racks probably outnumber boats being hauled up north. The extension of the Heartland Trail from Park Rapids and Itasca State Park west through Detroit Lakes to Moorhead is not only important for local residents, we use it for a lot of physical exercise, especially older people, but it's linked to Fargo residents. And this trail will make it one more reason why North Dakota people will love to come to Minnesota and to our lake country. The typical bike rider does not show up in stores with a helmet and spandex and clutching on a bike, but is typically a family. They stay at a resort, a motel, a lodging facility. They just maybe do 10 miles out, 10 miles back. Later on, they eat in restaurants, do shopping, that kind of thing. So I just want to correct that kind of vision. They aren't with tents on their back and sandwiches in their saddlebags. The $1.5 million is the first part of this extension. It's been working on for a long time. It has generated a lot of support, and I'm asking this this committee to support the project. That made it its own. The Heartland Trail is owned by the state. It was a pioneering effort. It's born and given birth to many other trail sections, and to see it that it not only is important for the physical well-being of residents, but it's important for tourism and for job growth as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Dill. You know the drill.
Yes, I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm here to talk about an appropriation that was in a bill some years ago for the Mesaba Trail. And since that appropriation was made in the bonding bill, it was to connect Bearhead State Park and the city of Ely and Tower, Sudan. It's a fair distance, about 30-some miles, to connect the state park and those two cities. Actually, three communities, one township, two cities. But since then, some interesting developments have occurred. We created the most, allegedly, the most coveted state park in Minnesota, the Vermilion State Park. It was overwhelmingly passed by this body, or the previous body, to make that a state park in a bill that I had the great fortune to author. And now, suddenly, the appropriation is going away when the trail is scheduled to go right through Vermilion State Park, a park that is going to have more than 400,000 visitors, as according to the Department of Natural Resources. Strange that that might be the way this would turn out, that we'd pay $18 million for a piece of land that we already had a state park right next to in the first place, the Tower Sudan State Park, that the DNR never did anything with, except have a hole in the ground, send an elevator down there and take people down and show them around. And now we're going to have a bike trail that was authorized to go through a new state park that we paid $18 million for, but we're going to get rid of the appropriation to put a bike trail through it. I don't know. Something doesn't make sense of that for the people of Minnesota. So Mr. Manzaline is here. He's the expert on this trail. This part of this trail is ready to go to design build and ready to do almost immediately. A part of it is not. Frankly, there are some alignment problems, but this is the trail that is going to connect two state parks, one of them the most very valuable in the entire state, and one of them that is frankly underutilized, Bearhead State Park. They're very close to each other. They're very close to Lake Vermilion, and one is on Lake Vermilion. With that said, Mr. Chairman, I really need this to leave this to the experts on the details if there are any questions. But it seems to me quite strange. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead and identify yourself for the tape.
Mr. Chairman and representatives, Bob Manzaline, working on the Mesaba Trail project. The Mesaba Trail is 132 miles in length, extending from Grand Rapids to Ely. Not all of it's done. We have 104 miles done now between the city of Grand Rapids and Biwabik. Been a very successful project. It's taken a number of years. We've developed the trail in segments. Segments we were able to construct in seasons and as funding comes forth. As Representative Dill said, we've been working on the trail between Tower and Ely since 2006. We received the bond money, I believe, in that year. We started working on the pink line shown on your map, which is an abandoned railroad, the abandoned DM&IR railroad between Sudan and Ely, which is a great place to build a trail. The grade is there. It's fairly easily built. It's fairly flat. It's a good location for the trail. We were designing that in 2007. We heard, and I think you know of, the offer from U.S. Steel Corporation to sell the Vermilion State Park, which is the orange on your map, to the state. Okay. We started working with the Vermilion State Park folks to relocate the trail north of and through the park. First deal fell through. The second deal came up in 2009. Again, we're on hold to figure out what the park was going to do with the development. I did serve on the park committee to develop trails and other things, amenities through the park. That's been resolved now. It's December 31st of last year. And I think everybody's waiting and ready to go here very shortly on these trails constructions and the park's development. That's all I have, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dill, you mentioned Bearhead State Park. Is that the park that won the national contest for most popular park in the country?
Representative Dill.
Mr. Chairman, I can answer the question. Don't know the answer to that. Is that true, Representative Rukavina?
It is.
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, it is true, and I think it was, did Coca-Cola or something put it out? I think it was Coca-Cola, and they put it out nationwide in Bearhead because Representative Dill is so good with computers, emailed everybody and got them to vote for it.
If you, Mr. Chair, if you'd have mentioned Coca-Cola, it would have jogged my memory. I'm a fan of Diet Coke, and that helped.
Okay. Representative Dill, can you tell me if any part of this trail would be shovel-ready, as we like to say, this summer?
I'll let Mr. Manzling offer. The answer is yes.
Mr. Manzling.
Mr. Chair, yes. About a third of the trail right north of Bearhead State Park on your map would be ready for construction this summer.
Mr. Chair?
Thank you. Representative Rukavina.
If I could just comment, too. I mean, this is a little north of my house. It's in Representative Dill's district. But, you know, being that a lot of the land up there is either owned by the feds or the state, and, well, the state's not a problem, but the feds are a problem, and so are the mining industry, and they still have mineral rights. And a lot of this land now has been sold by U.S. Steel to a company from Texas called RGGS. And it's hard to get the easements, and that's part of the problem. Mr. Manzling worked very hard to try to get the, you know, the main part of the Mesaba Trail on the core cities, and I think it took him years. And that's one of the reasons why this gets so delayed, is because it's just so hard to get easements from the feds and from the mining industry, and now I think he's secured all of them. And then right when that happened, the park came in, and you know, former Governor Pawlenty wanted the park, and so they kind of tried to work that in with this, so I'm sure it's ready to go, and I hope that you don't cancel it. We are now going to get Representative Dill, after he's lost all the weight, to ride a bike instead of a snowmobile.
Representative Boleyn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Manzling, we at the beginning of this hearing were talking about some projects that were given a time for completion, and we haven't yet reached that time. In this project, do you have a time for completion?
Mr. Chair and Representative Moline, the total monies would be spent, at that part of it, in completion, would be in 2012.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Hansen, would you like to discuss the bill more, or sure. Did you have another idea?
I had another idea.
Okay. Representative Hansen.
So I would move to delete subdivision 30, the cancellation of the intercity passenger rail. And, Mr. Chair, I would ask for a roll call vote.
What page is that on again? Section 30, you see? Discussion. Oh, Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would speak in favor of that, and I think the federal funding is one thing. We have this unique opportunity, in light of what's happened in a few other states, that a significant amount of federal money is on the table. And Minnesota, because of all the work that MnDOT has already done with the state rail plan and the projects, is in fact ready to go and would be in a position to apply for those federal funds. And this this is that one small piece that's a That's a local commitment to the federal government, which clearly is an important thing that they always look to. I would suggest that what many other states are doing right now is looking at the reality of what's happening in the world and what's happening to gas prices, and looking at alternative forms of transportation as something that we should be doing more of. This is intercity passenger rail. We'd focus right now on the state, and what I hear from legislators all around the state is not just in a metropolitan area, but the entire state wants to be connected to an alternative form of transportation so that we're not just bound to planes and cars. One of the reasons that becomes important is what we've sometimes dubbed the silver tsunami, the aging population around the state. And in a number of these towns, grocery stores have closed, medical clinics have closed, and there's a population that would still like to remain mobile. And so focusing on a network that provides another form of transportation to the car or to the plane has become increasingly important and certainly sought after by everyone literally around the state. When you go to the Passenger Rail Forum, I think all parts of the state have at some point been represented at that table. So in light of the timing of this to capitalize on that federal funding and to keep this momentum going forward, I would strongly speak in favor of the amendment.
Representative Duskrowski, but wait one second. Would Mr. Arsenault come down? I'm going to have a question for you after Representative Duskrowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, I'd speak in opposition to the amendment. Members, we need to remind ourselves while we're here today. We have a $5 billion budget solution that we need to arrive at. We've got, as I understand, over $6 billion in outstanding bonding debt in the state, which is contributing to, now for the first time in our history, a projection of over $1 billion from the general fund being used for debt service. So the reason we're doing this is to decrease the pressure on that general fund for debt service. The people cannot afford the overextension of promises that have been brought forward in the past, and this is a beginning of that. Actually, Mr. Chair, I'd be interested in amendments that would add to this list. Maybe in future bills we'll have the opportunity to cancel even more projects. That's the direction we need to go. The notion that, for instance, high-speed rail and these other rail projects, as we borrow and spend or attempt to borrow and spend our way into prosperity, and I did hear that from some folks that they believe that these are creating jobs, even though we are taking money away from families and job providers, and we don't consider that in the equation and how many jobs are actually killed or canceled because we are taking money from people against their will and from their businesses in order to fund the projects that we think are the best. We are looking at a rail project or a variety of rail projects here that members are costing the state in the general fund in other areas additional monies for the operating costs of those lines. The people riding these lines in the current projects that we do have built out, they're not paying for themselves. The Hiawatha Rail, 56% of the operating costs is paid for by taxpayers. 80% of the North Star Rail, 80% of the operating costs is paid for by taxpayers. If we build these out, we're going to put ourselves even further into debt. Mr. Chair, members, we're on the right track here. I appreciate the bill and speak opposed to the amendment.
You're going to answer my question. My question is, he mentioned money that was released in Florida. It was a 2.4 or 2.4 million or billion, I can't recall, but that's is there any money, federal dollars, that are tied to this currently? And identify yourself.
Yes, Mr. Chair. My name is Dave Christensen. I'm project manager for the state rail plan with MnDOT and in the Office of Freight and Commercial Vehicle Operations. Besides the $2.4 billion that was released from Florida recently and put up for a competitive solicitation and bid just last Friday, that we had to respond to by April 4th. There are current other dollars that are committed right now. We have several million dollars committed to Northern Lights Express from the federal government that is being matched by county and local and state dollars. That project is in its draft environmental assessment work right now and entering preliminary engineering. We are just days away from the Federal Railroad Administration approving the preferred route and the next steps on that project. St. Paul Union Depot has approximately $40 million of federal monies that is being supported by the $10 million that is named in this bonding bill that's allocated to it. That contract has essentially been signed to move ahead with it. They entered construction January 18th on that project. There's also up to $70 million of local county funding matching those dollars. That is several thousand construction jobs and rehabilitation jobs that are already on the table where people are being hired for that work. That project will be completed in 2012. It's on a very fast track, very ambitious construction schedule. We will have Amtrak as a tenant in St. Paul Union Depot by the end of 2012, as well as Greyhound and Jefferson bus lines and Metro Transit. And in 2014, that will be the terminus in St. Paul for the Central Corridor Light Rail Line, as well as other commuter bus systems and future rail operations as they occur. The other projects, and we have representatives in the room from Rochester and the high-speed rail connection from Chicago to the Twin Cities, as well as the passenger rail form, are all moving ahead. I sit on the steering committees and am staff representative for the high-speed rail effort, for instance, from Chicago to the Twin Cities. We are in the third phase of alternatives analysis.
We're running out of time, and you didn't answer my question, so thank you very much. Representative Bills.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just curious. I hear the comments about federal dollars, and I'm just wondering if those are the borrowed federal dollars or the printed federal dollars.
Or worse yet, could be my dollars, Representative Bills.
Well, possibly, but, you know, Mr. Chair, prices do send signals, whether it's a free market or otherwise, and sometimes I wonder how we're making our decisions and if we're using perhaps the best indicators to make those decisions. It's no one's fault that's here today testifying. It's more of a fault of the decision makers at this table and in other bodies and in years past. I mean, how are we so certain that we're not malinvesting? How are we so certain? It sure is a different economy than in the 1950s when I know people love to think about the interstate highway system and the great overall, you know, good that did to commerce. But are we really in the same boat with a federal government that and a Federal Reserve that's expanded our monetary base by, you know, it took 95 years to build it to what it was 3 years ago, and we've doubled it. You know, interest rates is a signal. The interest rate is just the price of money, isn't it? So if we've doubled the monetary base, what does the interest rate do? It goes down. It goes down, doesn't it? So I just want us to think about those things before we invest, and I sure am more than willing to look at these things. I understand capital investment, I really do, but I think we also have to think about those other elements as to where those signals are coming from. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm wondering if there's someone from Minnesota Management and Budget here that would maybe give us a little light into, are we out of line? Is our bond rating based upon something? We're not the federal government, but our bond rating is certainly based upon past practices and the fact that we don't bond as much as some states do. We're not California that bonds for operating expenses. I mean, states have gotten themselves into trouble, but I don't know if there's anyone from Minnesota Management and Budget, but I've been on this committee for a number of years, and we're always told that we're very conservative and that we have one of the five highest ratings in the nation. We are one of the five states with the highest rating in the nation because we are conservative. And I don't know if there's anyone here who could address that and verify that, but that would be helpful.
Representative Scalzi, I don't think this bill is up before us for that particular reason. Right. There may be many reasons, some of them political, some of them not shovel-ready, some of them are completed or not moving forward. Representative Rukavina.
What, Representative Hausman?
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. the questions that were raised would be those I think that the business community would be good to have here to answer, and I was disappointed that none of them were here, because I believe it is true in every single case where these projects are going to happen, the chambers are strongly on board. I know that is true in of the St. Paul area chamber. I believe that is true of Rochester. St. Cloud, I have visited with the president of the chamber there. I'm sure that's the case in Duluth. Wherever we talk about these projects, it is the business community that is on board. In many cases, they're leading the charge, because they understand the importance of transportation infrastructure. And that's what this is. This is transportation infrastructure. It serves one very important kind of role. And it fits in the whole context of all infrastructure, and that is to thrive as an economy. There has to be targeted, very carefully targeted infrastructure in place, and certainly that's true in higher education. I wish we could put the science building in St. Cloud in this bill, because that prepares us for the future, and it should be there. I was very, very disappointed that that one was vetoed. Higher education, wastewater infrastructure, transportation of all sorts, including ports and railroads. When we talk about this project, the money that we put into passenger rail is also going to help the freight rail industry. And moving more freight around this state is also going to be a good thing. When we improve that infrastructure, it's going to move both freight and passengers. So I think the business community locally supports it. I wish they were in this room and speaking to us, because they have been at the forefront and solid in their support. And that tells me they know something about successful business. They're some of the biggest business players with great bottom lines, and they know this makes good financial sense.
Representative Rukavina, did you want to say something?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just, to my good friend, Representative Drozdkowski, for those of you not on taxes, I explained one day that in taxes to Representative Drozdkowski that in Croatian the word draz means to charm, but the verb dražiti means to irritate. And he's drawing that fine line here today. So, Representative Drozdkowski, a little bit of what you said is true, but, if you have a big bonding bill, there's no way that it doesn't put people to work and spur the economy. I had the opportunity in 2009 and last year to, run for governor, and I went all over this state, and in the late summer and early fall, while construction was going on down in your area on the way to Albert Lea and Rochester, and everywhere I went over this state, there were people working. And, I don't care what anybody says, that put money in people's pockets. And yes, it costs money to pay for that. But I think Representative House or Representative Houseman helped me. I mean, as a billion-dollar bonding bill, we'll say, or half a billion-dollar bonding bill ramps up, the debt service on it, it ramps up too, but it might be $17 million the first year, and then $19 million and $21 million, and yes, over time, the 30- or 20-year lifetime of those of that particular bonding bill, yes, you're paying $1 billion plus the interest back. But you put a lot of people to work initially, and Representative Bills, you're the economist. I'm not. I've often admitted to being probably the legislature's worst capitalist. And I'm kind of proud of that. But anyway, if we hadn't built a highway system, where would we be? And the taxpayers built a highway system. The taxpayers move our goods. I've been down in your area. The nice jobs down there, those steelworker jobs at Flint Hills, is it? And those goods get moved by the highway system, paid for with bonding money by the taxpayers of this country and state. So, members, I don't have an opinion one way or the other on a lot of these projects, but I do know that these projects put people to work, and I think the chair even agrees with me that a good-sized bonding bill will help our economy in the long run. Don't you kind of agree with that, Mr. Chair? But anyway.
I would hope you'd support
Representative Rucavina will talk.
And an amendment.
Representative Scott, we're going to vote after this.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just ask, I guess Mr. Christensen from MnDOT left, but I would just ask everyone in this room, if this was your money, is this where you would put it, is into these trains? Because they don't exactly have the best track record, no pun intended.
Okay, Representative Hansen renews his motion to amend out delete subdivision 30. Roll call being requested. The clerk will take the roll.
House?
No.
Scott?
No.
Banyan?
No.
Bills?
No.
Carlson?
Yes.
Clark?
Yes.
Drazkowski?
No.
Fabian?
No.
Hansen?
Yes.
Hackbarth?
No.
Hausman?
Yes.
Hayden?
Yes.
Kreisel?
No.
Lanning?
No.
Myrie?
No.
Nornes?
No.
Rucavina?
Yes.
Scalzi?
Yes.
Spedins? Oh.
No.
Chris? Sorry. And Ward?
Yes.
We missed one. Oh, I'm sorry, Moline.
Yes.
Thank you. We have 9 yeses. And 12 nays.
The amendment is not adopted. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rucavina.
Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering if Representative Dill's compelling testimony might have changed your mind at all, or if we could have a discussion about that trail that you, Mr. Chair, really pushed for that state park. In capital bonding and ways and means 2 years ago, because I recall, yes, Mr. Chair, you really pushed it, and so I know that you probably are having some second thoughts about this, removing this, and I'm just wondering if I should wait to talk to you about it or offer an amendment today.
Representative Rucavina, number one, you should wait, talk to me about it. Number two, I was with you with regard to the Vermilion State Park, but since I was the lead on capital investment, I was speaking for the governor and simply telling the chair of the Senate and the chair of the House what the governor would do if they passed that particular size of bill.
Yes.
And if it didn't contain Vermilion State Park.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and then you made the motion.
That was my job.
And I appreciate it.
As is my job today. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try moving to delete subdivision 26 and ask for a roll call vote.
Discussion. Seeing no discussion, the clerk will take the roll.
House?
No.
Scott?
No.
Banyan?
No.
Bills?
No.
Carlson?
Aye.
Clark?
Yes.
Drazkowski?
No.
Fabian?
No.
You know my feet.
Hansen?
Yes.
Hackbarth?
No.
Hausman?
Yes.
Hayden?
Yes.
Kreisel?
No.
Lanning?
No.
Moline?
Yes.
Myrie?
No.
Nornes?
No.
Rucavina?
Yes.
Scalzi?
Yes.
Spedinsky?
Spedinsky. No.
And Ward?
Yes, we're going to have the same total, I think.
Yes, we are. 9 ayes and 12 nays.
The amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on the bill. Representative Nornes.
Mr. Chair, first of all, I had to be out of the room here for a little while and missed the testimony from a couple of folks in my area, Mr. Green and Mr. Smith, as he talked about the Heartland Trail. And I'm not going to make a motion at this time, but I did hear an invitation to talk to the chair at a later time. So if we can talk, if that would be appropriate. I won't ask for a vote at this time.
Representative Nornes and to all the members of the committee, this will be going to Ways and Means. There'll be a time, a pause here. If further information comes forward, I'm not going to make any promises, but things could change. So bear that in mind, and we will move forward from here.
Mr. Chair, I just want to add, I understand what you're doing, and I fully support that. But I also know that this project is pretty vital to the rural areas of Minnesota that I come from. But that, enough on that right now.
Seeing no further discussion, the chair will renew his motion to pass House File 1104 as amended, with recommendation to pass to Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
The bill passes. Members, we will be meeting next Tuesday. It will be a bill dealing with refinancing some bonds and trying to save some money and some cancellation, and then we'll be meeting on Wednesday to talk about flood mitigations. And Draz wants to say one thing before we adjourn. It better not be long or we'll adjourn.
Very short, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to confirm. I know there was a discussion about talking to you and my friend Representative Rukavina. By the way, it's Draz today, a representative. I just want to ensure, too, that if there are amendments to come forward for more cancellations, maybe Vermilion Park or something, I could talk to you about that as well.
I would say talk to Representative Rukavina. Maybe you could tag
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Means adjourned.